Just finished watching The Rogue Prince. What did you think, Ray?
I thought it was even better than the pilot. Obviously, without, you know, beating around the bush, my favorite scene was the showdown.
The standoff.
Yes, the standoff between uncle and niece. And again, like our own iteration of Hamlet, you know, we have Scar and Simba.
Yep.
And we have Damon and Rhaenyra. It was just astonishing. And it was like the creators are really not holding back, you know. They gave us the stakes of the show really early on. They're not delaying it. You know, they're having really exciting scenes early on in the show.
I love that. And it still doesn't feel rushed, though.
It doesn't feel like it. No, they took time. You know, that happened about halfway through the episode or so. And also, like, the performances, the acting, the micro acting is amazing. The emotional reasons for doing it is amazing. But probably the most important thing they're establishing is just Rhaenyra's leadership.
Yeah.
Just what kind of a queen she would be and just how much better she is at this.
Than her father.
The alternatives.
Than Damon.
So
she knew exactly, and I actually want to highlight this. You mentioned it during the episode, which was that is how she diffused that very hot and tense situation between Otto and Damon.
Yeah,
is that she knew exactly when to show up, what to say, and like let's cut through it. And I think you had some good words.
Yeah, exactly. Which is she was not mincing words. She just went straight to the issue, which is, you need to kill me if you want to be king.
Don't beat around.
So go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So just her fearlessness and also just the way she speaks is very different to the political maneuverings and the tone of political conversation in the show. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that she cut right through that and spoke with such candor, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And you can see just how amazing she would be as a leader so far. And even though she's young, she's much more strategically aware. And also she's so intelligent. Mm. Like, you know, she used a preventative strategy.
That's it.
To negotiate and get the outcome that she wanted without creating
and a realistic one. I mean, Otto was going there, which was a very strange move for him because you associate him being quite wise.
Yeah, he would have killed everybody there.
He would have killed everyone with that. And it just, at the very best it could have gone for Otto without Rhaenyra would have been a fight, like a sword fight, and Caraxes would have stayed on the, because that's almost like a Putin move. It's like you
also, how majestic were the two dragons, you know, and you just see like just the height of their power, just the Targaryen power. It's actually, it makes so much sense why they were insane.
Yeah,
because just the range of their power was so intense. And it's actually a miracle that any one of them managed to stay sane and reign for as long as they have.
100 years.
Like, what that must do to someone's psychology to have that much power, and how you can then, like, still respect other people and yourself and navigate challenges and conflict if you know that you have a dragon at your disposal. And that's why I also really liked Matt Smith's performance, because you can tell he's also doing a lot of this from a wound. He's hurt.
Yeah. But he doesn't know how to talk to it. He doesn't know how to resolve it. And then him sending that letter was almost that bubbling to a head where it's like this unresolved pain and hurt and wound.
Yeah.
The inarticulate kind of sort of manifestation of that is,
that's right,
a mocking lying, you know, because he lied about Missaria.
Yeah.
Mocking, lying, shit stirring kind of letter.
Yeah.
Just,
and that's
to provoke
why it's
something.
Quite petulant.
Yeah.
And it is,
not,
you know, a plea
thinking.
For attention.
It is.
And that's why, you know, in the scene in the aftermath where he's speaking with Missaria, you can see like he's sort of pursing his lips a bit and he almost looks like a child, who's sulking.
So, which is so interesting, because Missaria, she is an escort, you know?
Yes.
And he, it's important to, obviously, we're not dehumanizing anyone, but we're saying there are sometimes relationships you have out of spite to spite someone. And there's clearly, I think, him saying, okay, well, if you think so less of me, well, then I may as well take a whore for a wife, you know. I may I may as well just outcast myself and act out and stuff.
Interesting. I'd be curious if that were true.
Mm.
Whether it's more like he feels comfortable because he doesn't feel worthy of somebody who is of high birth or nobility.
That's right.
Or whatever.
That's kind of my takeaway.
But the other thing is, he is comfortable and he doesn't have to pretend with this person.
That's how I appreciate
it. And she loves him for who he is because, you know, she'll also reiterate, like, I didn't come here for money.
And I didn't want to have children.
And I'm not even about that. Like, I just wanted to live a life that is free and with you. And so, yeah, so that would be an interesting development in terms of where the relationship goes.
Mm.
But very good.
Very good. How much out of 10?
I would give it a solid 8.5 mm-hmm. out of 10.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
How about you?
I think it's a 9 for me.
Yeah.
There are so many very powerful scenes, and there are, I mentioned these tiny nuances in performances, which you actually beautifully said, like, it's just acting, Albert.
Yeah.
Which is these little, tiny little inflections.
Yeah.
That actors do, like Risa Vans as Otto talking about his wife, I do not envy you.
Yeah.
You know, like that sense of it's the character, it's them speaking. There's no performance.
Yeah.
That's where it hit him. And, you know, you'll see later when we watch the inside the episode, Alison talks about, well, she knows what Viserys is going through because she saw her own father go through it when he lost his wife, her mother.
Mm.
So that's why she knows how to comfort a man who's grieving having lost his mother.
Yeah, she's extremely interesting. Yeah, two things there. No, I her character is very, very interesting.
Alison.
Yeah. But before I get onto that, I think some of the things that I'm quite enjoying is just how, even though these issues happen in, you know, medieval times, they're still so relatable.
Mm.
You know, you have, say, fathers and daughters trying to connect, not being able to talk to each other. You know, Otto's the hand. Viserys, you know, not knowing how to speak to his teenage daughter. And say even Alicent, you know, this woman who's clearly physically self-harming. Sort of like what is the attendant kind of mental health or emotional challenges there that she's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the words of her father, like, she's the most sort of comely, woman at court, and yet she is physically signaling to the world that she is damaged and wounded because her fingers are bleeding and bruised all the time.
To keep people away almost. And it's Viserys also, I mean, he's having this thing with his finger.
Yeah.
And his ailment and his, you know. So yeah. It's very strange. Yeah. This shared. Mm.
Yeah. Also, shout out to just strange and bizarre things happening in this world, which is that of child marriages. And,
yeah. Oh, thank you. That's
and,
it.
And.
Yeah. Lyra. Yes. No, Lena. Lena, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That was also a really interesting scene, you know, just sort of like the scripted thing that she rehearses.
Yeah. I'll give you many children, oh dear.
And just obviously the child not knowing what that means, right?
Yeah.
You can't know what that means when you're that young.
No,
yeah, when you're 12. So that's also something really curious, you know. Game of Thrones always had these sort of very confronting sexual politics, but that was really cool.
That's right. But this
cool as in confronting. And well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I appreciate is that there's evidence that HBO and Game of Thrones, or rather House of the Dragon, is telling an uncompromised story. I mean, it's going there with certain things. It's going there with incest. It's going there with violence, certainly. But there's not... It's so... I can actually tell that there's no double D, which is, you know, those guys.
Yeah.
Motivated overt violence and overt creepiness and weirdness. Like, I swear that when I think about the Theon Greyjoy, you know, how he's getting, like, skinned alive or having his dick chopped off or whatever.
Well, it's also season 3. But yes, yeah. I mean, there were gratuitous... and violent scenes in
and
in
you
Game
heard
of
Miguel
Thrones.
Say like it's we're never going to just do something for the heck of it, and it felt
he
like
he was hoping
scenes,
it's
yeah.
only episode 2 we'll so see. I just want to take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of things, I think Miguel, like, you know, we talked about how he directed the most sort of significant battle scenes. So they are experienced, and I love that George is co-writing or co-creating this show.
Yeah, he's very
When I saw that, you know, conflict, that sort of standoff between Daemon and Rhaenyra, I was just like, oh, this is George. You know, this sort of badass woman flying a dragon, you know, giving no shits, just not having it. I thought that was amazing. And the conversations that characters are having as well, which are building their motivations and their emotional and psychological profile up further, is very interesting. Like Lord Corlys and Daemon. And that of the second son, the wounding there, the psychological template there in terms of what drives them, what wounds them, why do they do the things they do, why are they aggrieved, right? And what then precipitates the choices that they make.
That's so fascinating that even with their station, that's what I've always found so interesting. It just tells you about the relativity of where someone is in the power, in the chain of power. Like for them, essentially having anything the average person, I guess, or even the upper average kind of class could ever want, which is, you know, basically endless funds, you know, a title, like enough, right? Yeah. And that it is just a human nature to want more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Corlys and Daemon, you know, you called it. I did it when I was watching. I didn't know who he could have been talking to.
I knew it was Daemon.
You see, yeah, she knew it was Daemon.
Yeah, it's just because he was in the pilot, he was a fan.
Yeah.
He wanted Daemon to be named the heir.
Which is funny, Corlys is also a fan of Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
Who they squared off against. And I know that, Rhaenyra, we'll watch, again, we should probably watch the inside of the episodes before we do these. But this is just a quick little, 12
and
minute.
And I also like the conversation between Rhaenyra and Rhaenys.
Yes.
Again, we talked about the second sons, but then doing this sort of deeper dive into how the crown perceives women and the role of women. So then now we have the profile of the women and the stakes there how the women have to face the odds against them and then how the second sons have to face the odds against them. So I really appreciate that the showrunners are doing that, which is building up the emotional reasons and the stakes there so that we better understand the characters and how they maneuver in the coming episodes.
It's so solace-bringing to know that they either on an instinctive level, Miguel, having made Game of Thrones some of the best episodes of Game of Thrones, whether they know it, having just simply made it. We went to a restaurant recently, and we were talking about how at a certain point after having made these dishes over and over, it probably becomes an intuitive process. And I would call them, you know, like these master chefs of these incredible, like, visual culinary experiences, you know, but all I was going to say is whether it's something that Miguel has sort of like sat with, like, what is the, he did say something like, what is the core of Game of Thrones and what do we want to kind of carry on? But it seems like it felt like we were just right back at it, especially with the intro music.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Two things to say to that. No, it's interesting you say that, because on the one hand, the experience is definitely contributing to his confidence and his ability to wield, right, this sort of complex story and Miguel. This world, right? But the other on the other hand, it's not the same thing.
No.
Whereas, like, you know, say at a restaurant, they're cooking the same dish over and over again.
Mm.
But they're playing with new ingredients, new characters, new people. So it's also a new canvas, if
that's
you will.
That's true, actually. Right? It's the same canvas. Yeah, there's enough that's different about it that gives it a new feel. You know? Gives it a separate feel.
But the theme song was great.
Yeah.
Bloodlines, you know, I love that motif.
Mm-hmm.
The colors are amazing. You've got the dark sort of oxblood, like this red with the golds and the sort of iron, pewter gunmetal color. I thought it was stunning.
I loved Rhaenyra speaking out of turn, but very logically, again, perhaps if they had done something right away with the crab feeder, which is a very interesting villain. We will probably learn about why he does what he does. I can only assume it's probably He might relate to crabs and want to has a kinship with them, and tortures people that way. Or,
yeah, you know. I love that the episode started with that.
With him, yeah.
Right, and ended with that. So I like that circularity, and also like it's extremely sadistic. It's a very slow a way of torturing and killing people.
Totally.
So I think they've introduced him as a villain very, very well. So I'm excited to know more. But I do agree, you know, the thing that Corliss said, it's like you have to go around a storm or through it, but you cannot await.
It's coming.
And so I agree. Like there are many times you kind of see Viserys just avoiding confrontation. He's or
really bad that way.
Violence. You know, he just kind of wants to make his models. Like, yeah. I know he's good at being a king and he's lovely and his temperament. He's a peacetime king. Yeah, that's right. I guess you need a very, very different kind of wartime general.
And that's, you know, you need to be good for both. And the thing is, you see Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra loves, she's very playful. Like her and Alison, like she knows how to be playful and fun.
Yeah.
But she also knows how to strap on like her armor and do the work. So that's how she is an improvement. And that's what you hope for your kids, is that they evolve to become better than the parents. Yeah. You know?
And that's the mark of a good leader, though, isn't it? Like someone who's integrated.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has those playful, kind of emotional, empathetic nuances to them, but also someone who can ride a dragon and then, you know, take no prisoners and give no shits if they would like to.
Yeah.
So I really like that. And also, it's going to be interesting to see how her relationship with Alicent unfolds over time. The betrayal of her friend, I think that was quite painful for her, especially because her friend has been like a bit of a confidant for her after her mum died. So I think that's also going to be interesting in terms of how that affects her and the kind of person and queen that she becomes.
For me, the thing with Viserys, which I think, again, he just needed to have explained it a bit more, which is that he said, look, the reason, I don't know, maybe it's going to be a scene in the coming one, it's like, the reason I chose Alicent is because I swear, like, I have no intention of having any kids.
Yeah.
Like, if I married Lena, then it would be highly expected that the bloodlines unite, and then the people would be asking about that. But now, with that, if I'm with Alicent, I think what he wants to do is just be with Alicent, never have any kids, and just basically die, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And so that Rhaenyra can ascend the throne.
Right.
And I can see that would be his explanation. It's like, that's why. I know you guys are friends.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy that we're even talking about a 50-year-old, you know, marrying or even being engaged to like a 50-year-old, or a 15-year-old.
But it's better than marrying a 12-year-old. I'll say that. I'll take a 16-year-old over.
Look at what we're choosing.
I know. Because, you know, at least Alicent, at 16, you can have sex. She's of age, I guess. It's still extremely young and gross, but it is better than statutory rape.
Most certainly. We are going to watch Inside the Episode 2. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Just finished watching Episode 3, Second of His Name. What did you think, Ray?
Man, it was like a late bloomer. But gosh, the way that it ended was pretty phenomenal. I think that was deliberate, you know, because I think maybe 45 minutes into the episode, I remember saying, is this a filler?
Yeah.
But gosh, that battle scene at the end was really spectacular and such a great foray into Daemon's character.
You know, we don't watch these just for the action, like, at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one of my favorite scenes is from last episode was a standoff where very little happened at all.
Yeah.
But it was about your brother's name and da-da-da, like that intense, amazing delivery by Otto, you know, and him, you know, basically lying. Like, Viserys didn't have that much of a problem, didn't call him a shame on the realm or whatever. So House of the Dragon / Game of Thrones has a couple of things that I watch it for, like that you really, you know, you not suffer through, but you kind of bear with the really slow, drawn out scenes where you and I turn to each other and like, why are we looking at this forest, you know?
Yeah.
And we love deliberate silences too, But the ones that really make me go, fuck yeah, are amazing battles, which you said something about, Miguel.
Yeah, oh, I just wanted to say, I don't think anybody does battle choreography like Miguel Sapochnik.
Yeah.
There is a great, you can tell he's a true student and scholar of warfare. He knows how to stage it, how to pace it. But this episode was a lot about Damon for me.
Yeah.
Just
it was Damon.
You can just see how it's like he should have died.
Yeah.
And he, yeah, and it's almost like he was ready to. But it's so interesting
how much clarity you get when you want to not want to die, but like, yeah.
But I don't even, I think like his brother is sort of the great foil catalyst. The great love of his life.
Oh yeah,
that really is his brother.
I mean, there's sibling love there, like
because it's because it's almost like the. I mean, he's been fighting this war for 3 years, but it's the letter where his brother says, "I'm sending help," where he just catapults into this razor sharp focused person.
Yeah,
where now he has to win this war without his brother's help. As if to show his brother that he can do this without him.
Yeah.
It's just so fascinating to me how Viserys is like the great catalyst for his actions, inaction. It's really, really precious to watch.
I want to get your bead on a few things. One is when... And not that I'm getting any echoes of Double D whatsoever, but do you remember how there would be something in some of these inside, the episode stories where the guy's saying, and this is why this character feels this way. Yeah. It's because of this. And then I'm there sitting being like, I don't think so. Yeah. I think that the plot needed that, you know?
Yeah.
Not that it's anywhere near anything Game of Thrones bad.
Yeah.
But this thing of, Viserys on his child's name day, it was just a bit muddy. That whole thing of him being drunk and sad and stuff. Like, when you really look at it, it's like the stepstones are going bad. Like, you should be sad. Like, be sad. Be sad about your ineffective... Like, that can be narratively fulfilled. Viserys sad. But pick a reason that fits. And, like, Rhaenyra, like, you know, she... It is complicated because he wants... He never wanted to give her... Is that what I'm missing? Like, he never wanted... She didn't want the throne. She didn't want to be any of that. She just wants to read her books in the Godswood. And is that like what I'm missing? Like he feels bad for putting this pressure?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, from the get-go, the first thing we see her do is riding a dragon.
Yeah.
So she's very much like a warrior, and she's kind of, again, like the heedless contrarian, like her father describes her, you know. Yeah. So I think it's more so a couple of layers there, but I think just to follow on up on what you said, which is in the beginning, we actually see him quite happy at Aegon's birthday, remember? Mm-hmm. Like he's like smiling and stuff like that. So the fact that, you know, there's actually this lamentation on his part as to whether he chose the right child as his heir is not so clear to me.
Thank you.
I didn't quite get that he's wondering if he made the right decision.
Like, that's what
with Rhaenyra. But I get she's being bratty and she's being upset and she's being, you know, like...
But it's not meaty. It's not like a meaty thing happening, is it?
Yeah, it's like 2 years have passed. So if... And the brother has been there for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like... If that tension has been there between you guys for 2 years, but not us, you still need to introduce that to the audience a little
bit. That's the risk you run by doing the time gaps.
Yeah, which I don't mind. I just think they needed to just contextualize that a bit more.
Yeah.
But, you know, and some of her problems I think are very relatable. Like she doesn't want to get married and she just wants to be free, live her own life, that kind of stuff.
What did you think of the... I was going to Lannister, but you could go.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say that the beautiful moment was when the White Hart, right, sort of blesses her. There's that sighting. As if to say she's the chosen one. I thought that was very special.
Yeah, I was just going to scrub through just for like little launch off points. But that is the most un-Lannister looking guy. You've had this wonderful refrain about casting.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's okay. We're allowed to. People are also aesthetic people.
Yeah. Right? I think it's just because, I don't know, I thought Jamie Lannister was such a babe.
Yeah, everyone looks a little bit run down.
I kind of expected this guy to be... I expected this guy to be a babe, and he was not a babe.
He literally, and again, he's an amazing actor. He plays a San Francisco homeless man in Debs.
Nice.
Alongside Sonoya Mizuno.
Okay.
And it was just... And the thing about them being twins...
Yeah.
...was kind of interesting. Also, the very, like, over-dramatic, belabored thing of the, like, slaying of the heart. Like, I just found... I love Patty.
Yeah.
Patty's a great actor, but he was just very draggy this episode.
I think he was just...
Is it because he's feeling draggy, like, the
I
character?
Think he feels very tired.
Yeah.
And I also think it's, like... I only think he named Rhaenyra to the throne.
Yeah.
Because Emma died. Right. And his obsession with her son killed her.
Yeah.
And so, like he says, it's to placate and sort of alleviate that grief and that guilt that he put her there.
See, without these
discussions... He never intended to put her there. He never wanted to really put her there.
So he feels bad for basically... Okay, I think I get it. He feels bad for making Rhaenyra a pawn in his grief.
Yeah.
Where basically he only instated Rhaenyra...
Yeah.
Out of guilt over Emma, not out of wanting or believing or even thinking about Rhaenyra being queen. So I get it because he feels guilty for essentially a little bit of misogyny that he has. He might be a kind king, right? But that idea
he's a man of his time.
He's a man of his time, and I think that's why. Is that he's like, I was just very disingenuous, like, on so many fronts.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's that bit of whelm that he has of every time I disappoint one. And I just feel like you are really good with people.
Oh.
You could jump into the screen and tell Viserys, like, hello, wake up. Like, yes, you have to disappoint people.
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
Okay, and you must disappoint people as a king.
You would.
But I also thought what was really great was Alicent asking a really great question.
Mm.
And it just also shows you, like, a situation can change completely if you ask a different question.
Yeah.
Which is, this is not about your brother and you and your kind of, like, bullshit.
Yeah.
It's about, like, is the realm better off with the Crab King here or gone?
Crab Dick.
You know,
Crab Dick got fried.
And it's just, oh, yes, that was epic just to see the torso.
Would you like some crab torso for dinner?
Yeah, I'll and his entrails sort of just out and about. But I really liked that, which is all of a sudden she just changed the focus of the situation completely and made the decision for him very easy. So... that was also a nice moment in the episode, I think, where it just shows you that even something difficult can be easy when you ask the right questions or when you ask a different question.
And I think Alison was the, you know, some people after these episodes, they name, like, diplomat of the episode, warrior of the episode, whatever. For me, look, right, this episode, I'm even scrubbing through it now, it's a Daemon sandwich.
Oh, my gosh.
It begins with Daemon on the beach with Caraxes right here.
Yeah.
And then it ends with Daemon on the beach and Caraxes having a nap.
Yeah.
I found this amazing. And then, that interesting, like, crushing of the Targaryen soldier, you know, that idea of, I mean, and I said, like, I'd much rather, like, be killed by a fucking dragon than a crab.
Yeah.
This stuff here, the Hightower. By the way, this is, like, Papa Hightower telling Otto, like, hey, you know, get your shit in order. So everyone's being bullied and made, you know, inside the episode, they're like, this episode's about, like,
and the thing is it's almost like, you know, Rhaenyra is like, I will be replaced.
Oh,
and
yeah, you said, like, she was bratty this episode,
and it's just like, well, your dad really likes you,
yeah,
and so it's almost like they need to have this showdown because the audience hasn't seen them for 2 years. But I'm guessing, like, wouldn't they have talked about it by now?
Thank you.
And if so,
like for 2 years, you guys are still in that
space? Yeah. So it's almost like, you know, like, the audience just kind of got introduced to something, but we're being expected to sort of see, like, 2 years of rage and whatnot.
It is different.
Which then, you know, she had that cathartic moment with the boar, right? And again, that's all fine, but I feel like she had 2 years of rage But I feel like that's a conversation that she would have had with her father.
Mm.
So they could have been a bit more subtle or a bit nuanced about it.
Yeah.
So, but still, you know, that I'm just sort of picking straws.
No, that's cool. I need to also talk about, you are a very purposeful storyteller and a lover of purposeful storytelling. I just found with all the portentousness and all the kind of, you know, interesting magic of fate in the air, that when Sir Criston stares out into the blackness, and a fucking, I mean, he's so anticlimactic.
It's, or is it?
Well, I don't know. Like, what's it? You can look it up quickly. I can't because I'm recording, but what's the, just go Boar, B-O-A-R, House Sigil. Boar House Sigil, Game of Thrones, or...
Oh, is that a...
Song of Ice and Fire. It has to be. It's like the most, one of the most heraldric-tastic animals, like which family? Because Baratheon, obviously stag, people are going to read into that.
House Greyjoy.
Greyjoy? Oh,
no. Huh? No, it's a kraken. Sorry.
Kraken, oops. Yeah. Boar kraken. Oh, boy.
I don't actually know.
No way. Isn't... Are you saying there's like no boar? Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. Anyway, I'll have to look it up later.
Yes.
Yeah, all of this stuff here with the brown stag.
Okay, know. So obviously House Stark is a dire wolf,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like what animal? Lannister is a lion.
Yeah. Aaron is a bird?
The falcon or the eagle or something.
Is this all the houses?
The top nine, yes.
Oh, top nine. Oh.
Tyrell is the rose.
Is the rose, yeah.
Golden rose. Greyjoy is the kraken.
I'm having like, this is...
Martell is a red sun pierced by a golden spear.
That's pretty cool. Oberyn Martell.
That's Dornish. Amazing. Dornish.
You're kidding
House
me.
House Baratheon is a stag. Is so a stag. The stag. So the white heart, if you will.
Yeah, but so yeah.
Let's see if there's a boar there. Tully is a trout.
Is a trout, yeah, that's right. Blackfish.
That's beautiful. Targaryen's obviously dragon. A three-headed dragon.
Also, most annoying character of the episode, my guy's brother.
Corlys's
brother. Just like, just chill, man.
But it's also been 2 years.
Oh, yeah,
he's
2 years
probably seen his friends being fed to crabs, so I get it. But
I get it.
But mutiny is never helpful.
Yeah,
so.
And I respect old mates.
Yeah, but that was incredibly epic, beautifully choreographed, a suicide mission.
Because we didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, just precipitated by the love that he had. All the weird, just the nuanced emotions that he feels towards his brother.
Yeah.
You know?
And what is that? Like, who reacts like that towards being told, hey, I'm sending help?
Yeah.
You know, by the way, like he's a rogue prince, and there's an argument to be made that Daemon is slightly crazy. You know,
he's insane. A bit unhinged.
So, which would mean, and that's why he even says Viserys about Rhaenyra. He says she's so contrarian that if I said you're forbidden from dating all Lannisters, that she would go off with Lannister.
She would just go and find one.
And he is in his own way contrarian.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, what does that even mean? It's like, and not only that, he basically kills the messenger.
Yeah.
You know, beats him to death with his own fucking helmet.
Just gets so angry that his brother wants to help him. But then, what do you know? It just precipitates. It just catalyzes this
epiphany.
Incredible razor-sharp focus.
Yeah.
Or was it just luck? Because if the dragon hadn't arrived, he would have been dead.
Yeah.
Was ready. He was really ready to die.
I think because it's like, all right, 10 more ships and 2,000 more people are on the way. What? To get fucking burnt up by dragons when there's that... tiny little skirmishes, and then fucking eaten by crabs, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I'm also glad that that was the crab feeder trilogy.
Yes.
He's fucking gone now.
Yeah.
Found him to be kind of boring.
I mean, if they did tell us a bit more about him, that
aesthetically would have been interesting.
Helpful. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, and he's got a form of the same stone disease that Jorah had.
So that's why.
And by now you can see that it's spread all over his body.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Again, this...
But yeah, a stunning episode. Also a really great preview of the next episode.
Yes. Oh yeah, what did you like about the preview?
Just what's just the character progression, you know, what they're going to show. I think, again, that you have the hush-hush whispers of the other people who are meddling, be it Alicent or Osho.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's Shorter also hair. Going to be, yeah, interesting to see how these characters manipulate the leads and where the story ends up next week.
Indeedy. I think you're wrapped.
Yes.
All you want to say? I'll just take it a tiny little bit from here. So I'm just looking through the episode 4 preview, and I just want to give like one thought for each of the shots. So people with candles on bridge, amazingly, for some reason, heating up the cat's paw dagger, but like so much that it's like burning red. I don't know what that's about. Mm-hmm. Are they going to cauterize something? I don't know. And it's Rhaenyra doing it too. So I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So check this out. Yeah, so she's reading from the book again. Otto, again, didn't you sense throughout this episode that he's like, what else do you have to plot for, you know?
Yeah, obviously, and he's got his agenda.
Suggesting she marry her two-year-old brother.
Yeah, gosh, that was a whole other bag of tricks,
which,
wasn't it?
Again, yes, Targaryens do that, but also, what is this thing with... Yeah, you said it, Ray, like, he must be the most questioned and belittled king on screen. He is.
Yeah.
He has no king energy.
Yeah.
Like not a teensy
bit. He
just
wants to chill.
He's not
particularly regal.
Yeah.
And I think he's a bit fatigued and burdened by that position.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people like, you know, for example, Rhaenyra. She's a queen.
Oh yeah.
She might be like a teenager, but she has that kind of sense of leadership and being regal.
Mm-hmm.
But Viserys, he can't cope with a lot.
No, he pieces out so easily. And, he's a stoner king.
I mean, like. Obviously, like his wife has died, but he often says like, I'm not beyond tradition and duty. It's almost like he's a reluctant king in many respects, and he doesn't.
He is the reluctant king. That's a good description of him.
And there's a lot that he kind of whinges about with respect to his role and position.
So, I'd rather him than a Joffrey. Like he's.
Oh my God. A 1,000,000,000,000%. Yeah. You know?
I get the feeling this fourth episode will be the last one with the kid actors. Because they're starting to look at least more grown up. So I think from the next episode onwards, we shift to Emma Darcy, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the Baelon Temple. Ooh, the conferring of a crown, Ray.
Mm.
Oh, then just puts it on his head. Great. Okay. Old Mate arrives with the driftwood frickin'. So he's been crowned another king somewhere else.
Mm.
Maybe he's like, I want to be a king here. And he's holding like an axe or something, which is really weird. She's got her own little cool little cowskin throne, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Anyone listening will see.
Oh, yeah. Too. That's it. Exactly. I think that's it, everybody. Have a good rest of your day. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.